Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 64. Ben Stark of Wonder Mill Films.
We talk about Marvel movies a lot on the show. We talk about comic book movies in general a lot on the show. With kind of a big comic book movie year on the horizon in 2016, we thought it might be a good idea to just kind of talk about the general state of Marvel, the state of comic book movies, it was a great opportunity for me to talk to an old friend of mine, a movie buff, a comic book guy, an old pal from high school, Mr. Alan Drago. Whenever we talked about this, you have some controversial Marvel opinions, so I want to kind of tap those, but I also wouldn't mind getting your input on your background with comic books, comic book movies, and then also kind of where you're at in this kind of war that we got coming up between Captain America: Civil War and Batman the Superman Dawn of Justice, which is the actual name of a movie. So I guess we'll just start with just tell me a little bit about your experience with Marvel movies, comics, and kind of where you're at with Marvel right now.
Well, I have always been very, very bad at somebody who could read a comic, in a serial sense, where they're doing it, they'll do a little 8-page, 10-page something or other, like once a week or once a month or however they do it. I am just way too impatient, and I've never been able to, consume comic books in that fashion. So as far as how my major introduction to Marvel Comics came about, at the public library, they had these giant compendiums of like the original Spider-Man comics, the original Fantastic Four comics. And so my first, I take that back. Probably my first exposure to comics in any form was buying the Death of Superman graphic novel when I was 9 years old.
Yeah.
That was my very first exposure, but that was probably the first time that I think something in the comic medium ended up being so thoroughly in the mainstream. I mean, I only got my hands on it because it was literally in the magazine rack at the grocery store. And I was like, and of course I knew Superman from like the Christopher Reeve movies as a kid. So I was like, Mom, please buy me this. And, it was a rare occasion where she said yes, And that was my first real, exposure to the medium. And then when I was a few years older, I picked up those big collections at the public library, and I read, the original Fantastic Four through maybe the first 50, serial comics that had been released. Same with Spider-Man. And so that's kind of what got me started on it. As far as beyond that, I have always sort of had trouble with the more established superhero comics like Iron Man and Captain America and Hulk and things like that, because, these are characters that have gone back to, in some cases, the 30s, 40s, 50s, and, they've been writing these stories for 50 years. And it seems like, they have, reboots and several different iterations over the decades. And I just have never really, it's like when you're watching the river go by and the river's like rushing and you don't know when a good time to jump in is going to be, because no matter what happens, you're going to jump into that river and it's going to take you downriver very, very quickly. And I think the idea of doing that was always just kind of a little overwhelming to me. So I have just been because I know that if I like it, I'm going to end up being like obsessed with it. You know, like if I read Iron Man and I like Iron Man, I'm going to have to read every single Iron Man comic that they've ever done. And I've just been too terrified to do that.
Yeah.
Just because I was like, my life will be taken over. However, you know, I've really been a huge fan of like one-off graphic novels. So I've read a lot of Alan Moore. Most of, I would say, mainstream, my exposure to mainstream comics has really been through the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And then, of course, I do a lot of, I guess, additional reading through, you know, I guess, Wikipedia. I don't know how Wikipedia is viewed as a resource as far as, you know, getting character biographies on Iron Man or Howard Stark or, you know, any of those types of characters. But it, for me, it just kind of gives me a map into, you know, what I was saying before about the different iterations that they've had. So, like I said, you know, I know enough to get myself into trouble, which is why, you know, I post questions to your Facebook with things like, if Tony Stark gets fat, is he going to have like a round part? Like, is he going to have to round out the middle of his armor? Is it going to throw off like the amount of energy it takes for him to get off the ground if he tries to fly? You know what I mean? And then,
right,
of course, I've got to make a joke out of it, and which is that why Robert Downey Jr. gets skinnier in every movie he's in as Tony Stark? So, you know, like I said, I know enough to get into trouble. I mean, I don't have an issue having an opinion, but I do kind of recognize that if I were to ever, I mean, I could not get into a debate with somebody who had, you know, been reading the comics since they were a kid, because I mean, I will absolutely be mastered. But as far as the content of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I mean, I've watched, I mean, both Thors, both Captain America's, both Avengers, all three Iron Men, like, repeatedly, you know, because it really is fascinating. Of course, I've done my research on, I want to know who Nick Fury is and what he's about, and, of course, Natasha Romanoff, and that kind of thing. So, you know, like I said, I have enough knowledge to be dangerous, but I don't think that I'd be able to write a PhD thesis on any of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think that you hit on something that Marvel does very, in my opinion, poorly, both Marvel and DC, in the comics world. They want people like you. They want people to hop on board and not be intimidated by this wealth of continuity that they have standing, but they can't help themselves. So right now there's actually a big reboot of Marvel Comics going on right now. And so everything has kind of got a new status quo, but that status quo is still tied up with old continuity. And if it's anything like DC's last big New 52 relaunch of everything, within three issues of each comic book, it will be totally convoluted again, because if you're not reading every issue in the Spider-Man, you know, universe of comic books, then you're going to be confused.
Right.
So it's very rare. I'm the same way. I'm kind of an obsessive completist, and it frustrates me to get involved with something that I can't see through from beginning to end, which is why I like movies, and like you said, graphic novels too are a really good way to kind of have a contained contained story. But they always shoot themselves in the foot. But what they've done extremely well with their films is create a really great entry point, especially just if you look at these, I think we've got 10 Marvel movies at this point in the cinematic universe. And if you look at how all that started with Iron Man and how they've managed to keep a pretty consistent thematic thread and character thread from the first Iron Man movie, which wasn't, you know, it wasn't totally designed as a starting point for a movie universe, but they you can tell they kind of always go back to that and make sure they keep things nice and continuous, and they do their homework, and they don't make any big leaps in story without kind of looking back and making sure that it makes sense.
Right.
So I think that, yeah, for they're just such great entertainment for people like us that love comic books, but we're just not able or willing to dive headfirst into, like you said, you know, in some cases 60 years of continuity and character history.
Yeah, I just to give you an example, I read they had, I think, four different series of comics a few years ago that were, you know, Star Wars Expanded Universe. And I was reading one of those series because they were getting published as the, you know, the graphic novels. And there was one edition that I could not find for the life of me, and it was driving me nuts. And I went, you know, I went to the Deep comic book store there in Huntsville and got some help from one of the guys and ended up finding out that the particular issue I was looking for was literally like a crossover between all four of the storylines that they had. And it was like, you know, I nearly had panic attacks like trying to read that one edition, because it was like they were referencing the other three storylines that I knew nothing about. And, you know, I'm sure you know what it's like. You're like, well, I want to find out what that's about, but you can't just take one step back. You know, you got to go all the way back to the beginning. But,
right.
But yeah, like, I think I like the way that they have done the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's, you know, one thing I think that we could probably try and clarify. So one of my, you know, Facebook questions, I asked you about, you know, palladium versus vibranium, and then tritium came up in it because it was in the Spider-Man movies. And then you said that Spider-Man was an MCU, but I'm like, you know, looking at other things, and I'm finding that, I guess, I don't know if Spider-Man was actually an Avenger or if he worked alongside them, but I know he was almost like, in some versions,
yeah,
he's almost like a protege of Nick Fury.
Right, yeah. So, so in the comics, there was a big push in the mid-2000s to kind of let the Avengers become the number one group in Marvel over Fantastic Four and X-Men. So they kind of beefed up the ranks of the Avengers, and they threw Spider-Man and Wolverine in there.
Okay.
So, yeah, and I think when we were kids, I think Spider-Man was like a reserve Avenger that they would call in for big, you know, big galactic conflicts and stuff. But he really wasn't kind of an active member until here in the last 10, 15 years or so. But
right.
In terms of the movies, he, you know, the Sam Raimi and Mark Webb Sony Spider-Man movies have no continuity with the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Gotcha. Yeah, because, and I mean, even in an expanded Marvel Universe, just period, I was watching some of the Daredevil TV episodes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so Matt Murdock protects just Hell's Kitchen. Spider-Man protects just New York City, but then by extension also Hell's Kitchen. Like, and so I'm just like, you know, I almost am, I'm sitting here like, how do the villains like even find, like, how do they, like, you really have to be like totally insane to think that you could successfully be a villain in New York if it's in Marvel, because it's like, then on top of Spider-Man, you've got like everybody else.
Right.
But yeah, so, but,
well,
that's
you bring up a neat point, actually. The and I guess before we go any further, let's, since you and I have seen all this Marvel stuff, let's go ahead and throw out there that we're probably going to get into plot points and spoilers for the TV shows and the movies. The Daredevil thing, one thing I actually love about it, I just like last week, we finished watching that series,
mm-hmm.
And one thing I really liked about it was that basically the whole villain, you know, Kingpin's whole plot is because of the fallout from the Avengers, you know, of new parts of New York being destroyed, and he kind of picks up on that. And he's small scale enough, and it's, you know, real estate ploys, that it's not going to pop up on, you know, Nick Fury or Tony Stark or Captain America's radar.
God.
But yeah, once they start bringing in Spider-Man, which now they do have the rights to Spider-Man, so he will be swinging around New York City. And in the comics, Daredevil and Spider-Man are kind of, you know, frenemies in a way. They kind of get along, they josh each other, but sometimes they fight too. So yeah, it's kind of like once you have this movie Spider-Man in New York, and you have Tony Stark, you know, presumably living in New York, and then you also have Daredevil. It's like you said, he's just watching over a borough. Why would anybody on any level, commit any crimes?
Yeah, and see, that was my when I started watching the Daredevil, I thought it was going to be like a self-contained thing. But as soon as they started mentioning, you know, the event in New York, I'm like, wow, really, guys? Really?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I couldn't believe they wanted to tie that one in too, but I was like, well, you know what, let's do this. I mean, this is I'm getting in on the ground floor with these, you know, it's easily digestible material. So, you know, I think it was, I guess that's what I like about the whole thing with Marvel Cinematic Universe is that, you know, I'm in the river as it's starting to pick up. And
yeah.
So that is really very cool for me. I know it probably makes me, I don't know. I'm sure there are comics purists out there who, I don't know, will call me a fair weather fan or something or a poser or something of that nature. But, you know, I mean, it works for me. And, I mean, at the end of the day, I feel like, Stan Lee, I mean, the man's creative output has just, I'm in awe of it. And I think that it's kind of good to get, you know, somebody like that and his ideas finally inserted into the zeitgeist. And he's, you know, somebody who's in the mainstream now rather than being, you know, comics have been a subculture for a very long time, you know. So I kind of like the fact that very big, very compelling, sometimes challenging storylines are now, I guess, you know, part of a person's daily consumption, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one thing that's great about, if you go on IMDb and you look at Stan Lee or Jack Kirby's IMDb credits, they have exploded because they get credit on all of these shows and all of these movies. Quick side note, if you want to feel that comic book overwhelming feeling, just consider the fact that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that TV show, is part of the Marvel continuity. I've been keeping up with it, and it's pretty tough. It is a pretty, you know, middle of the road ABC TV show, and it has its high moments and a fair share of low moments. But it's definitely kind of tough to keep up with that one. But I will highly recommend Agent Carter, which is fewer episodes per season and goes into a lot of that Howard Stark S.H.I.E.L.D. backstory stuff. Have you seen any of Agent Carter?
I have. I started Agent Carter, I think I'm up through about, I want to say maybe like episode 8 of the first season where, I think the episode that I last saw was where she goes to Europe and they hook up with the remnants of the Howling Commandos and storm that one area. I don't remember the particulars of the plot. It makes me I'm a very terrible geek in that regard.
Well, but, it's the Russian orphanage that the Black Widow was raised in.
That's right.
Which is awesome.
Yes.
I mean, you
that was a cool tie-in.
You mentioned that, you know, this is the Marvel movies are allowing mainstream moviegoers and audiences to digest this kind of heady comic book stuff. And that's one thing that I absolutely loved about Avengers Age of Ultron. It was the creation of the Vision character and how every plot thread in that movie kind of led up to it, where he had, you know, a body intended for Ultron, but he had the mind gem that was from Loki's staff. And it was all this stuff, And
he's worthy enough to wield Mjolnir.
Well, because he was, you know, he was given life by Thor's lightning. It's all this, like, insane, like, convoluted comic book logic, but because you've got a great writer and a great director in Joss Whedon kind of weaving it all together, and you have these performers that are dedicated to it. It really comes across, and I remember sitting in the theater and thinking, this is the nerdiest thing I've seen on a movie screen in such a long time, and I'm surrounded by normal people, you know, people that don't think about this stuff the way that, and it is phenomenal. Like, it's one of my favorite things. There's a film critic that I follow called Matt Singer, and he calls Avengers Age of Ultron, he says it's not the best comic book movie ever, but it is the most comic book movie ever. And I think that's a really great way to look at it. And it's, you couldn't have done that without those other movies leading up to it, kind of training people to think this way. And even in Ant-Man, have you seen Ant-Man?
I have. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was excited because I love Paul Rudd. I mean, seriously, you could put the worst writer and the worst director, you know, and slap together a movie with Paul Rudd in it, and I would love it simply by force of will, you know. I think that guy's fantastic. So I was pretty happy to see him kind of get added to the pantheon of people that are part of this thing. You know, I feel like, sadly enough, I kind of felt like there were some parts of that movie where I was like, this is a little cheesy, and I hate to use that word, but just like, and I guess it makes sense, but just like the way that he like talks to the ants, and you know, there are certain breeds of ants that do certain types of jobs, I was just kind of like, okay, like I'm going to allow this because it's Paul Rudd and Michael Douglas, you know. But under different circumstances, I don't know how I would feel about this movie, you know?
Yeah, it's probably the most early 60s kind of Silver Age idea that they've tried. I mean, I think the Thor conceit, you know, of these Viking gods living in a castle in the sky, I think that comes pretty close, but I think they pull it off there just because it is such a harsh contrast to Earth. But Ant-Man has to be a little bit more grounded. But I do love in that movie the way that they introduce the microverse. And again, that's another one of those kind of transcendent movie moments for me where I was like, oh, so very nerdy, and I'm surrounded by grandparents and children and, you know, people that you know, that watch almost exclusively football. And it's just like, it's fantastic how they've totally infiltrated the normies with this comic book stuff.
Yes, I think it is. It's definitely the season of the geek. So if you don't mind me maybe changing course a little bit, I have a question.
Okay.
You mentioned in the setup that I had some controversial opinions. were there any in particular that you were thinking of or that you wanted to kind of hash out? Because if I've got a controversial opinion, I mean, I'd love to defend it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, you mentioned one that I don't necessarily take issue with, but, you know, I don't know. You mentioned that you prefer Guardians of the Galaxy to Avengers, and that's something I don't hear very often, I think. But I think that's just a fine thing. I mean, for me, I think Avengers is probably my favorite of all the Marvel movies because it does everything it wants to do so well. It's so colorful. It has the Hulk, who's a personal favorite of mine. It has Captain America, who's a personal favorite of mine. And it's right up there with Captain America, Winter Soldier as my two favorites. Mm-hmm. But Guardians of the Galaxy, definitely on second viewing, really hit for me. So is that something that, were you just, is that something that you think? Is Guardians your favorite Marvel movie? Where are you at with it?
I would say, and of course, this, you know, this is not by any stretch of the imagination to denigrate any of the other, because obviously, like, I loved Avengers. I loved Age of Ultron. Probably of the, you know, the individual characters, It's kind of neck and neck between Captain America and Iron Man as far as their individual movies. But Guardians of the Galaxy, So it is my favorite. But I think that, you know, a guy like James Gunn, you know, being at the creative helm of that, you know, Joss Whedon is going to do what he does. And I think that he was just the perfect person to do the Avengers. It was like, you know, I don't know. We may live in the universe where, like, you know, 9/11 happened, but at least we got to be in the universe where Joss Whedon made the Avengers. You see what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Like, and so, but like, to have a guy like James Gunn at the creative helm of that, to give him the budget that he got, I mean, I think that, you know, Joss Whedon had a lot going for him in the sense that, I mean, these are, tier one, name brand heroes, Iron Man, Captain America, the Hulk, right? And so he had a lot that was kind of in his favor going for him. Guardians of the Galaxy was, I mean, virtually unknown because nobody had ever heard of, like, Star-Lord or Peter Quill unless, you know, they were into it. I mean, you had to, if you will, take the red pill to know about Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, you had to have taken the red pill back when you were, like, 11 or 12. And whereas, you know, just somebody drifting through life is going to know who Captain America is or, you know, any of these other characters. So I guess now it is my personal favorite movie, but I guess the way that I like to kind of mess with people is I like to say that it is the best comic book movie ever made, and the Avengers is the second best comic book movie ever made. And I just say that because, I mean, yeah, it's a controversial opinion, and I absolutely love Guardians of the Galaxy, but to be able to make that claim, really, now we're having a discussion about, well, what makes a comic book movie a comic book movie? What makes it different from, I mean, if you look at the Avengers, like, let's take away the fact that the source material was originally comics. I mean, it's an action-adventure film, right?
Right.
So it's like, what is it that differentiates a comic book movie from, you know, a similar genre film? And so, you know, to say that Guardians of the Galaxy is the best comic book movie ever made, I think now we're getting into where we've got to, like, fight really hard to, like, classify and categorize and just figure it out what makes a comic book movie different from other genres in that it can be its own genre, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's gotta stand up as just a movie, but then it also has to, you know, it's the whole, is Django Unchained a Western? You know, is it, you know, what are the genre trappings that categorize something as what we want it to be? So what makes Guardians of the Galaxy a better comic book movie than a space adventure? I mean, again, you said not many people were super familiar with the source material. If there had never been a Guardians of the Galaxy comic book, other than the inclusion of Thanos, you know, in the film, there's not really a whole lot of it that suggests that, you know, there's even a greater universe there. So arguing in favor of the Avengers there, wouldn't the Avengers be, again, kind of that Age of Ultron thing, wouldn't it be more comic book than Guardians of the Galaxy, considering Guardians of the Galaxy can almost stand totally alone as a non-adaptation?
Yeah, I mean, I can see your point. You know, Guardians of the Galaxy, with the exception of, you know, the gem kind of being the MacGuffin for the whole
film.
Yeah. I mean, it really, if you take that out, and it's really more space opera akin to, like, Star Wars.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I'll certainly give you that. But, you know, that might be kind of one of the things that endears it to me is, you know, I've always kind of preferred sci-fi as a genre above all else. And so I like that about it. You know, the Avengers, obviously there are a lot of emotions that are communicated through that film, But for me, the thing that humanizes the film, if I can even use that phrase, but I mean the thing that humanizes it is, how does a film use humor, you know? So I think, like, it's almost like the how humor is used as a tool in a particular film is what defines it. Because obviously, you use only humor, you've got a comedy. You have almost no humor, you have a drama. You see what I mean? And
yep.
So what I like about Guardians of the Galaxy is that, you know, of course, there's humor in the Avengers. I mean, very good humor, and brilliant humor, you know? I mean, Tony Stark, I mean, the whole reason that I love that character is because of how humorous he's written, you know, and just how sarcastic he is about everything. Guardians of the Galaxy, I just kind of like that the humor is a little more off kilter. I think that, like I was saying before, you know, you had James Gunn at the creative helm for that thing, and I think that he almost got an advantage in that he was able to work with an unknown property, because he was able to put some of his signature flares into it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, one of the things, I think my favorite piece of trivia about that movie is that the awesome mix and the soundtrack was a tape that Michael Rooker, I guess, you know, he drives it around in this 70s muscle car, and this was the mixtape that he had made that was in his car. And so he shows up on set, and James Gunn ends up getting his hands on this mixtape that Michael Rooker had made and loved it so much that it ends up getting, like, worked into the whole property. And that's
wow.
The kind of thing where I'm like, that is something to me that makes the film so cool. And that's just the kind of little flair that I really appreciate. And that's, you know, I mean, I recognize that it could very well just kind of be a personal preference, but to me, that's almost like, I hesitate to use the term, like, it's almost like a Tarantino-esque turn of artistry. You know what
totally,
I mean?
It's totally an auteurist thing, you know, where it's the director really owning the movie and becoming the author of the movie. And that's something that, you know, we certainly value, and that people have come against Marvel with. You know, they claim that Ant-Man was taken away from Edgar Wright because he was bringing too much of his own vision to it. And, you know, maybe because Guardians of the Galaxy didn't have much, you know, capital, they probably, you know, took the cuffs off of James Gunn and let him kind of do his thing. So, yeah, I think that's absolutely a fair thing to connect to, because I totally agree that Guardians of the Galaxy is clearly a more personal movie than Avengers. So I don't think that's, you know, I don't know if it's that controversial an opinion. But now you did, we touched on a few things that kind of perfectly plays into where I'd like us kind of to talk about next, which is, well, A, you talk about the auteurist thing, but then also you talked about humor, and we've been talking a lot about Marvel. So my personal favorite comic book movie of all time is The Dark Knight, and I'm not sure if you're a fan of the Nolan Batman movies. I know a lot of people accuse them of not having humor, not having the right tone, but again, I feel like that's the movie in this whole group that works the best as a standalone movie, as this kind of crime caper that happens to have a superhero in it. But of course, DC is kind of going off of the tone of The Dark Knight and making their own extended universe that started with Man of Steel and is going to be continuing in, hold your breath here, Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. Which at one point was going to be released, I think, the same weekend as Captain America Civil War, but then I think Civil War got bumped. So it's, you know, the whole DC Marvel argument is a kind of a Coke Pepsi, WCW kind of argument that all of us like to have.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, so I mean, where are you at there? How do you feel about DC movies, Man of Steel maybe, and kind of going forward? Are you willing to take this enthusiasm you have for Marvel and port it over there, or do you see a harsh difference between the two, and if so, what is that difference?
So, my focus being on Marvel has more to do with there's a lot of content. If I decide, okay, I'm going to, like I did recently, this weekend, I'm binging on Marvel. You know what I mean? I mean, I did not run out of things to watch. As far as DC goes, so I think, you know, I know Joss Whedon because, and I shouldn't admit this publicly, but I kind of got into Buffy the Vampire Slayer a little bit.
Oh, no, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was just the way that Joss Whedon handles pop culture. I knew that he was the perfect guy to do the Avengers. But I have to say, you know, my first introduction to Batman was Tim Burton's and Michael Keaton's version. So in my mind, it's always been that there's a touch of darkness to Batman. And I know that that's a bold claim to make considering the TV series was off the charts campy. You know, the early comic books seem to have been, you know, how do I say this? The early comic books, I guess the TV series seemed to adopt that style. So the early comic books and the TV series for Batman, both kind of, you know, campy. They had like that 60s crazy flower child color scheme, you know? So
right.
To say that there's a touch of darkness to Batman, I think, you know, you could take that as a bold claim, but.
Well,
you know,
I mean, to be fair, I mean, the original comics were darker. You know, the original Detective Comics, he carried a gun and he, you know, it wasn't until the late 40s and 50s that it got kind of campy, and then that's what led into the series. So,
okay.
No, you're absolutely right when you say there's a touch of darkness to Batman. That's been something that they frequently go back to and kind of stay on.
Yeah, and, you know, and if you think about it, it's written into the DNA of the title. It's written into the DNA of Batman's story that it's going to be dark, because if you think of his origin story compared to the origin story of, I mean, just about any other comic book character, you know, Iron Man becomes Iron Man because, you know, his dad's a billionaire and he's a, you know, Tony Stark's a brilliant, prodigious engineering mind. And, you know, and then with Captain America, you know, he's the underdog who has the spirit, and that's why he gets selected to, you know, be given this serum. And then he, you know, goes off to fight the Nazis. I mean, those things are not the same kind of, I mean, it's a difference of kind when your origin story is, I saw my parents murdered as a child and grew up to become a vigilante as a result of that, you know?
Yep.
So when you're never, no matter how campy you want to make the TV show, you can't escape that that's why Batman is Batman. And so I think that, you know, Batman, he comes with that touch of darkness. And I think that Nolan, best Batman series ever by far, I think, of all the Batman movies. The Dark Knight, I mean, you can't improve on perfection, you know. Christian Bale was at his best as Batman in that movie. Heath Ledger, that was a grand slam, out of the park performance as the Joker. You know, because you have to think, how good was that performance? Good enough to be better than Jack Nicholson doing the same part.
Right.
And that's a huge mountain to climb, and he made it look easy, you know? So, yeah, I mean, I to people who, you know, say that, you know, was Christopher Nolan the right guy to do Batman? Yeah, absolutely. Because Christopher Nolan, he knows how to give Batman the depth and the darkness while still making it kind of a human movie. Because, you know, Tim Burton's Batman was great, but it was almost like terrifying. Like, it was so dark, it was terrifying.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I mean, that's Tim Burton. That's his thing. He's, you know, he does freaky things, you know, and he makes movies that are a little freaky and a little bit terrifying. But no, I think that, you know, Christopher Nolan was pretty much the perfect guy to do The Dark Knight and to do that particular iteration of Batman. I mean, honestly, the only other, I mean, for an American director especially, because, you know, outside of him, I think you've got to go with, you know, a European director who's going to have the stones or the artistic sensibility to be able to give the proper amount of darkness to Batman that's required.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, and I think he did still, you know, inject some fun into it. I think his movies are really are enjoyable action movies for what they are. So how are you? Okay, so DC, but they didn't necessarily make that a continuity thing. They didn't start
right.
their continuity until they did Man of Steel and now this
right.
new Batman Superman. So where are you on that?
So, you know, I didn't. So obviously, like every single other kid from the 80s ever, you know, I knew Christopher Reeve as Superman, you know?
Right.
So I've always enjoyed those movies. I've always thought they were great. It's always, you know, been the standard for Superman. And so, you know, when Man of Steel first came out, I'm not the type that really, like, rushes to the theater for things like I did for Thor, I did for The Dark Knight. I mean, I'm very select about what I go to see actually in the theater, which is probably another thing that makes me some sort of, you know, heretic in the comic book geek world. You know, for Man of Steel, there was so much, you know, people were saying that it was terrible, that it wasn't a good movie. You know, there was a lot of negative, negative commentary on it. So I was just kind of like, well, all right. So they tried Superman and they failed. And I mean, they were vicious, you know, even talking about, you'll have to forgive me. I don't know the name of the actor who plays Superman, but
yeah,
I remember reading. Yes. Henry Cavill. I remember reading somewhere where they were like, you know, they got a goose to star as Superman. And I'm like, where are they getting that from? Like, there's nothing goose-like about that man, you know?
Yeah.
So I ended up watching Man of Steel just kind of as a, I don't want to say as like a last resort, but just almost like, I was like, okay, I really want to watch something. I haven't seen Man of Steel. I should watch it so I can have my own opinion. And even with all the negative commentary on it, you know, going into it, so it wasn't like I could just be a blank slate to watch that movie. But I had as open a mind as was possible for me, and I don't understand what people didn't like about it. I thought that it was an extremely cool movie. I loved getting to see as much Krypton as we did, you know. I liked seeing things about their society. I liked seeing things about their technology. I liked seeing, you know, the way that they mete out justice. I mean, we literally saw the legal system of Krypton at work in that movie. And, you know, I don't know how other people feel about something like that, but I found that to be extremely compelling material. And then, you know, beyond that, it was, I felt like it was a fairly standard Superman movie. And when you're talking about, you know, quote unquote standard, when it's Christopher Reeve and those movies that have set the standard, saying that it's a fairly standard Superman movie is a compliment, you know? So
right.
I really enjoyed Man of Steel. And I, like I said, I thought it was, again, I kind of do this thing where, you know, I look at it as a genre movie, and then I look at it as a comic book movie. I mean, as a sci-fi treatment, that was an awesome movie. You know, as a Superman movie, there was absolutely nothing wrong with it. It was well executed. I didn't think that Henry Cavill did a terrible job of acting in the movie, not even remotely enough to garner some of the criticism that I was seeing online about it. So, I mean, maybe you could shed some light on that for me, what it was that people didn't like about it. Not saying that you didn't like it necessarily, but I tend to have, you know, tastes that maybe differ a little from the mainstream. So I didn't really get what all the negativity was about. I thought that was a cool movie.
Yeah, no, I think, I agree that it's a cool movie. I'm a huge Superman nerd. I agree with you also that Henry Cavill is pretty fantastic. I don't think he has much to do with my problems. For me, it's a tone thing. It's a Zack Snyder thing. The things he has Superman do, the overall tone, you've got a scene of Zod and Superman somehow having like a out of body experience conversation where there's like a mountain of skulls. It's all this stuff that doesn't reflect Superman to me as a fan, but also doesn't quite make much sense internally in the movie. But I loved it when I first saw it. And then it's just, you know, I step away and I think about it, and then it just kind of started fading. It had a lot to do with that ending, but then also, like a few weeks after it came out, Zack Snyder announced at Comic-Con that there was going to be a Batman Superman movie. And since then, I've only seen more and more evidence that this director and the studio was only ever interested in rebooting Batman and was never really interested in making a Superman movie. And I feel like that Man of Steel was a stepping stone on their way to, it'd be like if after Iron Man came out, we started to realize that they never really cared about Iron Man. They just wanted to get to an Avengers movie, and that informs problems we may have had with Iron Man. But that's not what happened, because Iron Man is a good movie that they focused on. And it's something that Marvel, I think, does really well, is they make sure each movie stands alone as a good movie. So for me, I have a complicated relationship with Man of Steel. A lot of it is probably attributed to my nerd, you know, status.
Well, I'll give you this. So we've talked about, you know, James Gunn, perfect guy to do Guardians of the Galaxy. Joss Whedon, perfect guy to do the Avengers, you know. Christopher Nolan, perfect guy to do Batman. When you said Zack Snyder for Man of Steel, I'm like, oh, now I'm seeing the issues. So I'll say this about the Batman v Superman film. You know, if that was what they really wanted to do, if that was their end goal, was to just get to where they could reboot Batman, I really... Then their selection of Ben Affleck makes even less sense. I didn't want to get on board with all the haters. Everybody was throwing so much shade at that guy about being Batman. And, you know, the truth is, in my heart, I agreed with him. I didn't vocalize it. You know, I didn't let my imagination run wild with, you know, creative ways that I could criticize that choice. But I will say that when I read that news, my reaction was like, it was a depressed sigh, you know? I will certainly say that about it. And to be honest with you, I mean, if it's going to be like, you know, if Zack Snyder is going to make that whole thing just even more Zack Snyder-y, then I feel like we're going to be scratching our heads maybe a little bit more. But I guess what I'm interested to know is, you know, given that we've kind of touched a vein here where, you know, it's crucial to find the right director to get the comic book movies done you know, either correctly or at least done well. I mean, who would you think would have done Man of Steel better than Zack Snyder? Not saying that, you know, Zack Snyder did the be-all, end-all job on it, but, I mean, who would your preference have been?
I mean, I think the easy answer is Brad Bird, because he made, you know, what is loosely the best Fantastic Four movie ever with The Incredibles, and he made what is very, very, very loosely the best Superman movie ever, which is The Iron Giant, where, you know, a big theme in that movie is basically, you know, this giant robot decides between being a weapon or, you know, a person, and in his final decision, he looks at Superman as this symbol of power and of godhood almost, but Superman decides to, you know, condescend to do the right thing, to be a human rather than be the the space overlord that he could be. So I think
right.
Brad Bird, not just in the way that he handles his themes, not just the fact that he's one of my all-time favorite directors, but also his movies have a lightness of touch and a color and a tone that never sacrifices depth and stakes. You know, I mean, in Incredibles, there are children that are at danger, you know, and so I feel like he's got this optimism mixed with ability to, you know, make really high stakes in his storytelling. That he's kind of my go-to answer for who should direct the Superman. But I mean, it's a tough one. It's a little bit. I mean, when you talk about Batman, you know, it's hopped around from Darren Aronofsky was rumored to be working on a Batman movie, or maybe David Fincher, or, you know, there's Tim Burton did a great job. Christopher Nolan did a great job. Zack Snyder might do a really good job. You know, there's plenty of directors that could do a pretty good Batman, I think. But I think, I do think there are fewer directors that can really nail Superman, just because also our cultural moment isn't very kind to Superman. I mean, I think Joe Johnson and the Russo brothers and Joss Whedon did a really good job of handling Captain America. I feel like that's a similar treatment that we should be getting with Superman, which is this guy who is maybe a man out of time, or at least a man out of his own culture that realizes that, okay, I've got a responsibility to do the right thing in this world that I've been put in, even if it's not the perfect world, you know, even if it's at times doesn't seem like it's worth saving. So I think that, I think it's a tough gig. And that's again why I think that at the end of the day, Man of Steel is a fun movie. It's enjoyable. It's not the Superman movie I was hoping for. And I don't think that they were ever really in the business to make the Superman movie. I think they were in the business to make a Justice League or Batman set up.
Oh,
kind of.
Yeah, I see. Well, so here's the question that I have been wondering that I'm sure you could answer. So I don't understand, like, Batman versus Superman, how Batman's got a dog in that fight, you know? I mean, Batman, sure, he's got a lot of cool gadgets. You know, he's essentially a ninja. Superman, on the other hand, literally invincible. I mean, unless, you know, you get your hands on Krypton or something, or Kryptonite, I'm sorry. So that's where I'm like, what is going on here? Like, how is this even a fight? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I do think that's the major question that everybody has going into this movie, and it's one of those fun questions that always pops up, you know, if a bunch of people are hanging out smoking pot or drinking or something, and just kind of like, well, who's going to win in a fight between Superman and Captain America or the Hulk and Superman, you know? And you know, Marvel and DC did Amalgam Comics in the late 90s where they pitted their heroes against one another, and it was a lot of fun. So I think that I can see the hook, and I can see I think that is the major question kind of going in. And honestly, I don't have an answer for this movie. And I think that's one of the reasons I'm excited for the movie, is to see, okay, how do they handle the power differential and the reasoning and the logic. I mean, in the comic books, they started out as pals that would help each other, but then over time, in like the Frank Miller Dark Knight Returns, Superman is kind of a pawn for Reagan presidency. And then Batman is kind of this vigilante that the U.S. government needs to take down. I have a feeling that's the direction they're going to go in, just because Zack Snyder loves Frank Miller.
Right.
I don't know if that's the right direction to go into, considering the end of Man of Steel and just Superman in general. I'm not a huge fan of Superman in Frank Miller stories, but I think that that's probably the direction they're going to go. There's the fantastic Batman animated series and Superman animated series of the 90s that they did a crossover, kind of made for TV movie, that does a really good job where I believe Joker goes to Metropolis work with Lex Luthor, and so Batman follows him, and it's basically a matter of jurisdiction. So they have some scuffles and stuff, but it's never an all-out war. And I think that's a really fun kind of way to do that, those two characters. But clearly in Batman v Superman, they're really kind of going at it. They're very adversarial. I'm not exactly sure. I would wager to guess it's the Batman thinks that Superman is a pawn, and maybe why Superman doesn't just snap Batman's neck the way that he did Zod. I'm not sure, but I guess that's the tension of the movie and why we're all going to go see it.
Well, I like that that dynamic that you bring up, because I can see that where, you know, Superman, and it kind of ties into what you were saying. You know, it's a culturally difficult time to make a Superman movie, because, you know, how do you get people excited about, you know, truth, justice, and the American way when everybody's, you know, cynical and detached,
right?
And you know what I mean? Like,
we don't respond to power very well.
Right. But I think that thematically, that kind of makes sense, where Superman is, you know, if he's upholding the establishment, then what he's doing is essentially fighting for the sanctity of the rule of law. Batman, as a vigilante, necessarily operates outside of the law, even if they're having the same ends, they're not pursuing the same means, and I can see there definitely being friction there. The only other theory that I have about how Batman really has a dog in the fight, so I've noticed in the poster that Batman's costume almost looks like metallic.
Yeah, so, there's definitely like an armor thing going on.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if they go in and they just establish that, you know, Superman's weakness, it's known that it's kryptonite, and he has some sort of, I don't know, blend, polymer or metal blend that he does to, you know, refurbish his armor so that it's got kryptonite in it, so that it, you know, when Superman goes to strike him or something to that effect, it doesn't have the same power as it would if it were just him versus anybody else.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I mean, that's my only theory on it. I mean, but really, you know, who knows?
Yeah, that'd be really cool. I think in the comics they've had Batman have like a ring in the Justice League cartoon, which again is an extension of the Superman Batman animated series. Batman has basically the weakness of every one of the Justice League members, like in the Batcave, just in case anybody ever goes crazy. So he's got like a little shred of kryptonite, which is the most Batman thing ever. So yeah, I think I think that's a really neat theory, and I wouldn't be surprised, because I don't think really mentioned kryptonite as an element in Man of Steel. They mentioned like the atmosphere, it was kind of weak. So maybe they'll do something with that, you know, where it took Zod, you know, it took Zod time to adjust to the atmosphere of Earth because of the kryptonite radiation or whatever it was in Man of Steel. So maybe they'll do something like that, but yeah, it's, I think that, you know, I'm, you mentioned too the kind of rule of law versus vigilante. Did you see the trailer for Captain America Civil War?
I have not, actually. I was a little behind. I didn't know they'd released that already. But
yes.
Go ahead and spoil it for me. I want to hear about it.
Well, I won't say anything other than that seems to be the direction they're going with in that film. But I'm not going to say anything else because it looks
now
awesome, and you need to just go watch that trailer. And you know, you may need some medical care afterwards. It's
well,
the baddest ass thing ever.
I know that the premise, which once I read the premise, I saw elements of it in Age of Ultron. I know the premise is that there ends up being a pretty major disagreement between, you know, Tony Stark and Captain America, and then everybody's, you know, got to take sides, and I can totally see that. And it makes a lot of sense because, you know, Captain America is somebody who is principled and duty bound. And, you know, I think one of my favorite Captain America lines from any of the movies is when she's warning him about going after Thor, and she says something about, you know, they're virtually gods. And he goes, "There's only one God, ma'am." And he doesn't dress like that.
Yeah, that's great.
And like, not only is that a great line, but I think that that is a great line that to define, you know, just where Captain America is on the alignment. You know, you're lawful good, you're chaotic neutral. You know, if we want to get into the, you know, Dungeons and Dragons thing, but I think that's a good way to also, like, for him to express where his alignment's at. Whereas Tony Stark, I mean, you know, the guy, it seems like he will absolutely breach ethics temporarily if he thinks that it's going to achieve something better. You know, Captain America will never use means that are inconsistent with his ends. Tony Stark, I feel like, will use almost any means if he gets the end that he wants. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I can absolutely. I mean, yeah. The Civil War storyline makes a lot of sense to me in that regard. So I'm actually pretty excited about it. I mean, I'm actually, to be honest, I'm kind of like bummed that they're not going to be working together because I like that dynamic. But I'm still kind of excited to see how it all plays out because I know that. The way that they'll deal with the themes and that we'll get to see, you know, Tony Stark and Captain America both really, I mean, they're going to be expressing the very core of their characters. And that, I think, is going to be very cool to see, you know, Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans play those parts that way, you know?
Yeah, it's a good thing I'm married, because if I was single and I said this following statement, I would probably never, ever get another date as long as I live. But there's a moment in the trailer for Captain America: Civil War that almost makes me cry, because of that exact thing you're talking about, the character dynamics and the performances of those two guys and everything mm-hmm. that we've seen them do up to this point. Yeah, it's almost one of those things I wish I had seen it in the movie first, but it works so well in the trailer, too, that it's really great. I'm running short on time here, but let's close out and just kind of go back to Marvel.
Sure.
So we've got Captain America coming out. We've got Doctor Strange. We've got, you know, a two-part Avengers movie coming out. We've got another Ant-Man movie that they've announced. What else?
Most
Black
importantly,
Panther.
The Guardians of the Galaxy.
Of course,
people.
Exactly, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So let's take that one off the table, since we know that you're a fan of the first.
Sure.
What one kind of character or movie are you looking forward to the most going forward?
I certainly won't be disappointed to see more Avengers and more Captain America, but I would say it's kind of a tie between Black Panther and Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Not only because Doctor Strange, some of the
some of the territory that they venture into with his stories are so just off the wall and insane that I'm interested to see what they do with the movie. But also, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch is playing him. So,
yeah.
I mean, that right there, I was like, this is perfect. I mean, that right there just had me sold. Like, this is probably going to be one of the movies that I'm going to go see in the theaters. So I was really excited with their casting choice. I can't put a face to the guy that they picked for Black Panther, but I remember thinking that.
To Chadwick Boseman, who played Jackie Robinson in 42, and he played James Brown in Get On Up.
And did he also play the linebacker or kid or whatever in Draft Day? Because I think that's where I know him from.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with that movie.
But I remember thinking that was a great casting choice too, and I'm really interested because, you know, Black Panther is that's like, you know, it's a title that they inherit as part of, you know, being a monarch.
Right.
And so I'm excited to kind of see how that all plays out. And honestly, I thought that the view I got of Wakanda was pretty cool in Avengers 2. And so I would like to see Wakanda up close. So
yeah, that's my answer is the Black Panther movie. It's just the comic is fantastic and it's so rich. Me and Matt Scalise, the other film nerds, Marvel freak, we've kind of nerded out a lot about that character in particular. And Matt's a lot more familiar with the comics than I am, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's kind of like Doctor Strange in that it's such a different direction that they could potentially go in for that. That it just seems like these Marvel movies keep finding new ways to do new things. You know, like you said about Guardians of the Galaxy, that's, you know, whatever the seventh or eighth Marvel movie, and yet it feels nothing like anything else that's come before it. And I feel like they keep setting themselves up to do that again and again. And that's one of the most, as a movie fan, it's one of the most exciting things about them is that there's so much variety.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing that you have to give to the Avengers over and above any other comic book movie is being as successful as it was. They're becoming more and more bold in their choices for, you know, which source material they're going to use for a movie. And I mean, that's something, I mean, I don't think that we would have seen Guardians of the Galaxy, Black Panther, Doctor Strange, if the Avengers hadn't done what they did. So,
absolutely not.
Yeah. So I'm definitely excited for probably the next 5 to 7 years of movies, at least.
Absolutely. There's always going to be something interesting on the horizon. Well, cool, man. Thanks. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me. This was fun.
Oh, hey, it was an absolute privilege, and I appreciate you, letting me be a part of the show. So, if you ever need a guest, just let me know. I'd be more
absolutely,
than happy
man.
To be on. So, thanks for having me.
Let's do it again soon.
For more from the Film Nerds, go to filmnerds.com and aspectradioshow.com.